welcome to another episode, one of my favorite shows to do, quite frankly, of the Stallone Podcast Network, the original collaboration of hosts and co-hosts. With me, of course, is Doug and Craig. Doug from The Rocket Minute, Craig from Slidecast. I mean, we all know who each other is at this point, I hope. How you guys doing? Doug, why don't you tell us how you're doing?
I was good, Ryan. Honestly, my life is now going to be segmented into two segments. It's before I watched Rhinestone and now after I watched Rhinestone. And I just don't think my life is ever going to be the same as it was. Those were happier days. And now I have this memory for the rest of my life.
Great. Oh, no. Great. Is it going to be that kind of day, guys? Am I going to be the one getting double teamed here defending this movie?
Well, Craig, I know they'd like to be double teamed by two men. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and how you're doing? How you doing, Craig?
Good. Thanks. We actually have our first spring-like day here in Vegas. So the windows are open. So if you hear any noises and stuff.
Is that your dog dying at your feet?
It's my dog whining. It's just us enjoying the beautiful Vegas weather before we need to turn on the air conditioner for the next 5 months. But other than that, I'm doing good. I always look forward to getting together with you guys. I think the last time we talked was for Paradise Alley.
Yeah.
And I remember, it's funny. Anytime those episodes like go up on the network, I'm like, oh yeah, we talked about that. You know, cause sometimes it's, you know, a couple weeks. This is always a highlight of my podcasting schedule, is to sit down with the two of you and talk about Sly movies. How are you, Ryan?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Yeah, we're going to get into this film. Of course, we're going to talk about 1984's Rhinestone. We've hinted at this. We've teased it. We've said this is coming down the pipeline. We knew this day would come. I'm excited to talk about this musical comedy. Doug, it's a musical comedy. Did you know that? It's a comedy.
I mean, there was music in it. I do recall there being music. Comedy?
Two top 10 singles from this
movie. Yeah, that blew me away. I can't even remember any Dolly Parton songs.
The songs.
I know, but like whenever I think of the music in this, it's that those pieces of shit that Stallone sang.
Yeah. Was it Sweet Love and Friends? Was that one of the ones that charted?
One of the ones with God in the title?
This record store I go to, the last three times I've gone, I always make a beeline to the soundtrack section because I'm looking to complete my James Bond collection. And the last three times I've flipped by, when I get to the R's, I flip by Rhinestone, and I always take it out and look and see it's like $8. And I'm like, I don't know, $8. Like that's, you know, that's lunch. So I always slip it back down. But the only good thing is nobody else is going into that store, making a beeline to the soundtrack section, going to the R's and being like, finally, my copy of Rhinestone. Next time I go, I might have to grab it just to say I have it. I actually have a pretty good Stallone soundtrack collection. I got the first three Rocky soundtracks, which
legit.
Are legit. Yeah. A friend of mine actually sent me Over the Top, which was really, really cool. So those are the four I have. I have some wish list stuff, of course. You know, I'd love to get like the Goldsmith's First Blood. I don't even know what kind of release that saw when the movie came out. I know it's come out since in an expanded edition that I have. It's always cool to get like the original product, see what somebody else picked up in 1982.
For the record, the two charted singles were Tennessee Homesick Blues and God Won't Get You.
Nice.
Oh, wow. So, you know, of course, Sweet Love and Friends didn't chart because we'd never hear the end of it from Stallone. Oh, you know who else would never hear the end of it? Frank would never hear the end of it.
Oh, man. If he had a charted single. Did Frank ever have one?
Far From Over did that.
I don't know, man.
I kind of feel like there was a very small window, Doug, where Frank was having some commercial and critical acclaim.
Sure.
Dig that one up. Sure.
Okay. So before we get into the film, let's say, of course, this stars Dolly Parton and Sylvester Stallone. They were both respectively about 37, 38 during the making of this film. They're both born the same year. Now, Stallone.
Hey, Craig, once again, sorry to interrupt. Oh, that's Far From Over did chart at number 10.
Oh, wow. There you go. So Stallone, bless his heart, he turned down the leading role to Romancing the Stone that was taken over by Michael Douglas the same year. And he turned down the lead in Beverly Hills Cop.
And anytime that actors talk about movies they turn down, if Stallone did Romancing the Stone instead of this movie, Seiko and Katie wouldn't have podcasted about it a year ago. Beverly Hills Cop worked because of Eddie Murphy.
We absolutely. I know what you're saying. Yes, I know what you're saying.
They completely changed the tone of Beverly Hills Cop for Eddie Murphy.
They did.
Exactly. And Romancing the Stone 2 was completely built on the chemistry between Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. It's always fun to do these imagining sure. what Stallone's Romancing the Stone would have looked like. It would have been just as much of a disaster as Rhinestone is to some people. And he'd be talking about regretting making that.
What about Rhinestone drew him?
I can think of two things.
Oh, all right.
I can think of three things. The two that Ryan alluded to. But then also, we know that Stallone has always had this secret desire to be up on stage singing. This was an avenue for that. I never fault Stallone for swinging for the fences. He misses a lot of times.
This is an exercise that clickbait film sites do all the time. It's nice fodder for discussion, just the alternate universe of what would this film have been like had Stallone been in Romancing the Sylvester Stallone film or whatever else, and it would have been a different film. And you're right, maybe it would have bombed and he would have had a terrible chemistry, and there would have been like, oh, he trying to be Indiana Jones and all that comparison. So you're right, he swung for the fence to star in a comedy, which he was not really known for. Yeah, we're going to get into the film a little bit. So, yes, Dolly Parton, she was 38. Her chest was 42. But no,
such low-hanging fruit. I'd be ashamed.
I mean, I knew she was busty, right? My goodness, I didn't realize it was that much. I guess I haven't really...
That waist, too, as well. You know, she's got that very tiny waist. I mean...
Was she wearing a corset? Like one of those...
I hope not. I mean, you know, it would be great to be able to brag, you know, that she can say, hey, look at me when I was in my late 30s, you know. Yeah,
21. Maybe
she looked fantastic. No matter how we dissect this film or talk about our feelings on this film, we all love Dolly. I think we could all say Dolly's a sweetheart. She's a national, worldwide icon. She's a national treasure. She's loved by many. She's basically the country singer version of Betty White, meaning like she's just beloved. Everyone loves her, and Sly himself was enamored by her, and rightfully so. But you remember back in the day, I think it was 2006, he did that big Q&A on Ain't It Cool News. He talked about Dolly, and he said here, this was the most fun he ever had on a movie. This was, of course, 2006, but it was with Dolly Parton. He goes on to say, I must tell everyone right now that originally the director was supposed to be Mike Nichols. Craig, you've mentioned this, how Sly loves to always, I think we've talked about this, how Sly, when a movie kind of craps the bed, he always... How should I say this? He never says, he'll say it's the editor, the director, not the right screenplay. So anyways, he goes on to say Mike Nichols, which is, of course, a very accomplished director. He was supposed to be the one that shot this. It was supposed to be shot in New York. It was going to be down and dirty with Dolly. And he goes, and I, with gutsy mannerisms, performed like two antagonists brought together by fate. He wanted the music at the time to be written by people who would give it a sort of bizarre edge. Believe it or not, I contacted White Snake's management, and they were ready to write some very interesting songs alongside Dolly. So I guess he was looking a hard rock type film instead of a hard rock country type film.
A little bit country and a little bit rock and roll. Like.
Perfect. Yeah. He says, well, he goes, I would have done many things differently. I certainly would have steered clear of comedy unless it was dark. Still, comedy didn't work for me. I mean, would anybody pay to see John Wayne in a whimsical farce? Not likely. I would say more true to who I am. What the audience would prefer rather than trying to stretch out and waste a lot of time and people's patience. So he's making excuses, but he is acknowledging the comedy in this film did not work.
It doesn't even make sense what he's describing as the alternate version of Rhinestone, though. What the heck is he even describing there?
I don't know. Urban cowboy musical, maybe? Or
So here's the frustrating thing. Stallone did a rewrite on this movie that the original writer did not want. He almost wanted to take his name off the film and was advised against it because it would be good for his career. And then Stallone turns around and talks about the comedy. The comedy in this movie is clearly Sly-driven. Yes. If you know Stallone and you know his voice and you know the comedy that he's done in his movies, there was no moments of comedy in this movie where I said, that's not Sly.
Right.
That's why it's insane for him to say that. All the comedy beats are clearly on his doing. It's totally his brand of comedy.
You get a super talented director and Bob Clark as well. It's not like this was some guy out of NYU. This was Bob Clark who had made arguably one of the first slasher movies ever. And it also made one of the like most beloved comedies of all time in A Christmas Porky's. Story.
Oh, I think it was Porky's. Oh,
no. No, that's infamous. That's infamous, Ryan.
Oh, Porky's is beloved by children near and far.
But I mean, nothing beats looking into the girls' shower and change room through the hole in the wall. The classic.
Oh, man.
To defend the comedy in this movie, there were a handful of moments where I genuinely laughed out loud at some of the comedy beats in this movie.
Oh,
obviously, this movie worked a lot better for you guys than it did for me. And this was not my first rodeo with Rhinestone. I've seen the movie before. I've podcasted this movie before. I enjoyed the heck out of watching it. In terms of the lone disasters, this one is by far my favorite. It's the easiest one to rewatch. I would rewatch Rhinestone over Stop or My Mom Will Shoot or Oscar any day of the week, twice on Sunday.
Okay, this is good. I didn't want this podcast to be necessarily a vacuum of, you know, crapping on the film. We don't even do that, even when we quote unquote crap on a Sly film, but it's always done with love, right? We love Sly. We love his films. He's our, certainly for me, he was like my action hero growing up, or my icon on film hero growing up, and he still is. I think I first saw this film, I must have seen it back when I was a kid. So it came out in 84. So I was 9 years old when it was released. I was definitely familiar with Rocky III and the First Blood and, of course, the Rocky films. So Stallone was on my young radar. Like, I knew that he was a movie giant. So I saw it for the first time yesterday in probably, well, decades. It was such a new viewing for me that I don't know when I last saw it. In many ways, guys, other than kind of knowing that Drinkenstein was a thing, I wouldn't have been able to tell you the plot of the film before the film. Like, I knew nothing. So I guess in reality, it was like my first time viewing. I wish I had a camera. I'm regretting now not doing this, filming my reaction to the film. Because there were moments in this film, which I did not experience with Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. I haven't seen Oscar in a while, that I didn't even experience with Escape Plan 3 or stuff like that. I kid you not, I was legitimately embarrassed. But I was watching moments of Sly's performance and the comedy beats. I'm not even joking. I'm not trying to be funny, but I did this a few times. Like, oh boy, I can't. This is wow. I don't know the last time I really cringed.
Ryan, the fact that you used Escape Plan 3 in the same sentence as Rhinestone shows that you didn't take whatever medicine you normally take in the mornings. Like, this is absurd. We're in crazy land here.
Fair enough. But that was my initial reaction. I was, of course, excited to talk about the film, and I wasn't even doing it because there was nobody around me. I was by myself. This wasn't for show. That's why I wish I filmed it, because I did this a couple times. Like, oh my, I can't believe this is happening. This is really happening on screen.
The beginning of this movie is terrible. I understand why they did it. It cuts between establishing the Rhinestone Club in Manhattan that's got like this rowdy crowd that enjoys holding party favors. You know, we established that Dolly is a nightly or a weekly entertainer at the Rhinestone, and then we intercut it with Stallone driving his cab. I can totally understand your embarrassment here, Ryan, because establishing Stallone's Nick character, it's way over the top. The only comedy in the movie that really doesn't work for me, because you've got the ridiculous Stallone cab driver and the ridiculous cab driving he's doing. And then you've also got like just the stereotypical 1984 Japanese tourist that want to go get sushi.
Yes, of course, of course. Why was he driving the cab like that? One, is that supposed to be funny? Is this how he drives every fare? Breaking traffic law, causing accidents. I couldn't be a passenger in this cab. Is this his daily routine? How did he not have accidents before?
And they even start it where like they show him basically stealing that fare. I thought there was going to be like a whole altercation with the other cab driver that he like pulls in front of. I guess it was just really to establish the idea of finding somebody that there's no way you could turn them into a entertaining country singer.
Well, mission accomplished.
Right from the very first line of the movie, when valet kid says to the club owner, "Good evening, Mr. Whatever." He says, "It's always a good evening when you're rich, son." I said, oh boy, we're in for a ride. And Craig, over the top is the only phrase you can use for Stallone's performance. It was cringing. I felt cringy. Man, he wasn't going for it in like the Stallone, the way he goes for it when he plays Rocky. This was just a goof to him. He was performing on camera for his friends and family. Like, look how silly I can be.
Oh, look at that. Somebody just said, let's face it, they cast the wrong brother.
Well, I mean, they should have cast someone that can sing if you're going to put him in a singing role.
Yeah.
The only guy in the movie that I appreciated when he went over the top with the acting is Dolly Parton's ex-boyfriend, Barnett. That guy had me laughing.
You know what he looked like? He looked like a Wish.com version of Kurt Russell.
Tim Thomerson, like, he was like a successful actor. Like, can you imagine Kurt Russell playing that role?
Oh my God, it would have been brilliant. Yeah. It would
just
have been
doing perfect. his Big Trouble in Little China John Wayne voice.
Here he is here. Like he looked like from the Quentin Tarantino film Death Proof. That's who he looks like here. Look at that.
Death Proof. Yeah, yeah.
I love Sly's shirts in this movie, by the way.
Oh, my
God. The one that you have up on the screen right now, which is like the Nigel Tufnel skeleton. And then there's the other one where he's wearing that time that it's he's cameras. Got like a camera
yeah.
around his neck.
Yeah. That was goofy.
There's some people who are watching and listen to our show who they kind of wait for our reviews or discussions to talk about maybe what the film's about. Doug, do you have a breakdown of the film this time?
No.
No,
I got this, guys.
Okay,
it's
great.
Okay, so it's basically 48 hours via country music. So basically, Dolly Parton makes a bet with this rich guy who owns her a 5-year contract on her that she can't take an average Joe and turn him into a country sensation. Also part of the bet stipulation is that he gets to sleep with her. The only other plot element that is of concern is Stallone has wrecked his cab. He needs money to fix the cab, which is why he agrees to take part in this bet. But then we also learn he wants his own cab, could start his own. I guess he doesn't want to drive for somebody else. That's it. And then the rest, hilarity ensues, and we get to the end of the movie.
A lot of the comedy is in the fish out of water element of the movie. It's, you know, New
slow
York.
Down, slow down, we're, slow down before we get there.
We can't get there yet. You have something before that.
I just want to just reiterate.
Did I say 48 hours? I meant Trading Places.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Trading Places. Sure. You know, it's a bet. It's a bet movie.
Yeah, you're right. So Dolly Parton works at this bar called the Rhinestone. I don't know if we mentioned that. So the bar is called the Rhinestone. I guess at the Rhinestone, for whatever reason, it's just full of hecklers. And this is a tough audience. This is a tough New York audience where they're singing country in New York, and you better be Garth Brooks type level. And the funny thing is the guy that sang at the beginning that looked like Tom Lee Jones. You see that guy?
With the scar? Yeah.
Yeah, he looked like Tom Lee Jones. And he was actually singing good. Here's a little bit here for a copyright. I can't play too much. But he looks like Tom Lee Jones. And his singing and his performance was decent. And they're just acting like he is the worst country singer they've ever heard.
So, yeah.
From the day my baby died.
I coached
the... Yeah, the one thing I don't understand is, so this rich guy, it seems like every week he brings another guy up or another performer up on this open mic
to
get his next star. Right. But he's got a 5-year contract on Jake, Dolly Parton character. He's got a 5-year contract on her. How is he not just devoting every moment?
I think it's two or three.
Why is he focusing on these bozos instead of like just making her a star? Or is his sole purpose to sleep with her?
Yes.
But then why have this whole other subplot where he's trying to find stars? He doesn't need the money.
Maybe it's a misogynistic thing. Like, he doesn't think a female can make it. The movie is proof positive that his character is misogynistic. And Ryan, I recently listened to your Worst of the Best with Katie on the Friends stuff that didn't work.
Yeah.
The guy is in Friends as Rachel's father.
Oh, right.
He plays Rachel's father, the doctor that hates Ross.
You thought he looked familiar. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I think he's passed away now, I believe.
I believe so as well.
Yeah, and the Kurt Russell Wish.com actor, he's passed away. He's the same, and he's the same age as Sly and Dolly, but he's unfortunately passed away. Yeah.
It was recently, right? Like within the last
2018 or 19. Yeah.
I'm one of the farthest things from woke, but the level of his aggressiveness towards Jake
made me uncomfortable. At the end of the film, he locks her in her apartment
and
basically tells her to take off her clothes.
He's got like the remote control.
Oh, that locked the doors.
It locked her in place. Now we see at the end of the film that she punches him out, that she didn't need no man to save her, but she was locked in. You heard like stuff being crashed and banged around. So she was being chased in the apartment by the guy.
And you saw where that guy lived too, right?
He lived in Trump Tower.
Oh, yeah.
That's legit. Okay. So I want to show you the sequence here of how they got Nick, which is played by Stallone, the cab driver. So he's got the Japanese fare in his car, and he's taking them to – I think he was supposed to take them to the Rhinestone. I think he was supposed to take them to the cowboy place. I think they were mentioning the cowboy place.
Well, no, they wanted to get sushi.
But he mentioned the cowboy place. Didn't he keep talking about the cowboy place?
Then he talked about Italian food. I don't remember how, but I don't know if they were talking about seeing something that was like truly American maybe.
No, he brought up the Italian thing. He said, well, you're in America. You need to eat Italian food. And then after them screaming at his driving, they said, take us to a Western place or cowboy place or whatever.
They're trying to get bums out. So the guy's going out and he's trying to recruit bums, like literally like hobos from the street, saying, make this person, because Dolly Parton's character named Jake, she's basically saying, I'm such a great country singer, which she, of course, in real life, she is. And let's just say Dolly's adorable. She can do no wrong. It's not her fault that she's in this film, like in that, or this film isn't her fault. Every scene that she's in and does, she's at the mercy of the director and the writer and the production and the editing. But she's a sweetheart. It was hard for me to even kind of make, I don't want to say fun of her, but it was hard for me. I didn't cringe at all with Dolly. In fact, when she came in and just sung like her normal songs, when she was just singing, like, oh, a bright spot in this film. Like Dolly's part in his performances and country singing was the bright spot for me. But her hair is as fake as her chest. However, the wigs are, I don't know what, I thought I knew, I don't know why, I didn't know she had wigs back then. So I didn't realize those were wigs, but they're, yeah.
Just save so much time, Ryan. Can you imagine Hollywood, they're on a crazy schedule to begin with when you're making a movie.
You're right.
Do you want to spend 4 hours doing her hair and makeup?
A lot of actresses have their real hair in film. They have their real hair in film.
No, a lot of entertainers, Cher is another example in the 80s. Cher was wearing wigs.
I didn't realize it was so obvious. I didn't realize it was that obvious. That's all. Like I guess I assume she did, but I'm not very good at catching wigs or hair extensions from ladies or whoever, but
I made her head look gigantic.
Yeah, well, so does Sly's hair. How did you think of Sly's hair?
Yeah, oh my God, this was its peak.
Oh yeah,
it was peak bouffant.
He was really doing that front buffing up in the front.
Yeah,
it was around this time that he was realizing, oh boy.
Me and a previous podcast host, we used to joke about that Frank and Sly had a hair off. This is probably the start of that hair off era. We've all seen that picture of Sly in that really loud shirt with the stonewashed jeans and he's got like the mullet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was peak hair off. Because Frank had some wacky hairdos too. You know, and this lasted a long time. The hair over the ear, it would come down to like probably just above like the bottom of the lobe. Yeah. A true helmet almost, you know, the Luke Skywalker, if you will. Yeah.
Terrible.
Okay, so I want to get to how they run into the
taxi club. Yeah, so I think the key point here is he tries to pick two homeless guys, and Jake says, wait a minute, we said normal people.
Normal people. Yeah, that's fair. And our listeners of the show and viewers can also just see a little bit of Sly's comedic acting. I think it's fantastic, so let's check it out.
Okay.
I mean, the next guy that passes in front of my face, and he...
So what did he hit? He drives up and you hear
another
the crash.
Car? We don't see pass by. So where does it speed off to?
A car behind the scene T-boned the cab. I guess it's off screen somehow because the damage is on the right side of the car. Anyway, so his car has been T-boned, but he continues driving. Of course, the line, the next person I see, why did she pick the Japanese tourist? Why did it have to be Sly? So he's pointing. Who's he pointing at?
I don't know, but the first thing he does is look at her tits.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I forgot. How many times did the guys look down in this film? Is it on purpose or is it by accident?
But didn't we also establish that he blames her for the accident? So he's looked at her already.
Yeah. Not close enough.
She distracted him, but he got T-boned behind. To the right of him, behind him, but he's pointing that way. But there was a bum in the street playing the drums. I think that's what we're.
Don't. You're going to drive yourself crazy thinking.
Keep going!
But then he drives away. He says he'll be right back, but where's he going? Like, what's the purpose of his driving? I'll be right back.
His car was all gimmicked up.
Okay, so he says to them, people he's never met before. Yes, in the movie, they're the stars. But why is this character saying, I'm going to be right back?
So he could look at her tits some more.
I guess so, because he drives out to the middle of the road to obstruct traffic with a broken car and then gets out? Doesn't make sense. So they've made the bet that Nick is the guy that they're going to do this thing with. Do we ever get any real dialogue as to why Nick agreed to do, other than, yes, we get a new cab. But and I don't remember them talking about going to that. Was it Nashville they were going to? Was that the
state?
They
went to Tennessee. Outside of Nashville, because we never see any bright lights. Like, she lives in the sticks.
Does anyone know what the reference to the domino is on his jacket? He references, he talks about it, he does wear it. Eventually does leave his wardrobe later in the film, but he does reference it. Is there something that I'm not aware of about dominoes? Okay.
Just some thing Sly was trying to make happen. You know what? And I don't know if we'll talk about this scene or not.
Any scene you want. Which one?
You know what I loved? Is there any other movie in Sly's catalog where we saw him interacting with both of his parents?
Oh.
Wasn't that like a cool dynamic to see? Sly as a son?
I'm trying to think, and I can't really recall.
I don't think there's any other movie where his parents had an active role. We see his dad and we see his mom.
Are we led to believe he's younger again in this film than he is? He's 38.
Well, I mean, those parents look like they could be in their late 50s.
They look their age, sure. They look 65, 70, quite frankly. But the way they treat him like a little boy.
I bet you that dad, I bet you that guy was like 53, Ryan. I'm telling you.
He was good.
I believe you.
He was a bright spot of the film. I liked watching him.
I think that whole funeral home scene, that absolutely works for me. And this is 100% Sly. I don't care.
The Tutti Frutti?
I do not care what anybody says. Him living over the family funeral partner is 100% Sly. Coming up the fire escape, 100% Sly. Right. And then the whole big organ joke worked for me. I'm sorry. There's the scene where they're talking about the big organ and the guy's like at the counter and like he gives Sly the thumbs up. Did you guys catch that?
Yeah,
there he is.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, the big organ guy.
They did it too many times though. Twice and move on.
We have to learn 50 of them. And let me tell you something. It's a tradition at the Rhinestone to tear any new singer apart. Yeah, do you play an instrument?
Yeah, I can sort of play a couple of chords on this organ I have at home. Hey, I'll tell you what. Why don't you come to my house and you can teach me a new song?
Go to your house, huh? I suppose that's so you can show me your organ, right?
And why do you think I'm conning you? I'm telling you, I really do have this big organ.
Thank you. Over the top.
That works for me. I'm sorry.
But why does he have to deliver it so over the top?
So the guy can turn around and give him the thumbs up.
I know, but it took me out. Him just sitting there shouting it just so he could deliver the big organ line. It didn't work for me, Craig. I expect more out of my comedy.
Oh, yeah. I expect to laugh. I had to double check IMDb. This was labeled a comedy. I didn't laugh once. I really didn't. I wasn't even trying to find fault. I just didn't find it funny. I didn't think anything was that clever or funny. I'm trying to remember where I did laugh, but I don't know.
The things that Sly did that I did find somewhat comical come in that fish out of water element of him like trying to walk like a cowboy. Later on in the movie, when he's trying to break the door down and he's like trying to shoulder the door and he keeps falling down. That got me maybe a chuckle. I'll give him a chuckle on that.
You know, you kind of remind me of the old Elvis, you know?
His every line delivery of his just – and the song, like that Tutti Frutti song.
This was the first moment. We're a half hour into the film. He's now going to show Jake, played by Dolly, his ability to perform. So he's like, okay, I'm going to do this bet. I'm going to be a country singer. I'm going to show you how I can sing and perform. The reason why I cringed is because I couldn't tell if this was Sly – sort of showcasing what he thinks is his ability to sing and be silly. What it exposed to me as a viewer is that he can't sing. And when he is being silly, it's not funny. I know it's over the top. I know we're supposed to say the character thinks he's good. I get it. I know the character thinks he's something special and that Jake, played by Dolly, doesn't have has a lot to work with. This will be easy for her because he's about to showcase his skills on the big organ. Here's a little bit of that performance. Shall we see?
The heat up.
I don't think so. Why don't you start from scratch and sing something?
Like what?
I don't care anything.
You hear that sound effect of the organ? That warbly sound? That warble.
You got it.
Yeah.
You ever turn on the organ?
This thing must have pneumonia.
Must have pneumonia. I don't get this. Look at this right here. This. I started cringing pretty hard.
And we're about to get another great visual gag as well.
It's not hilarious, guys. When they pan down and show the funeral.
Oh, sorry.
Parishioners. Okay, I get the joke there. But he goes way over the top, and he does it for way too long. It goes on for forever. It's like he plays the whole freaking song. But he's dialed up the whole time. He's at 10 the entire time.
Am I supposed to laugh? Am I actually supposed to go, I didn't. I felt embarrassed. I really did. I'm a huge Sly fan.
Craig is going to stop podcasting.
I mean, I laughed. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know if I like corny shit, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Comedy in that part is them panning and showing the people at the funeral. The comedy is not in Sly's delivery of Tutti Frutti.
The idea situation is being loud and boisterous above a funeral, right?
Yeah, and they all hear him. So yeah, Craig, I will say that's the good gag, but Sly doesn't deliver it greatly.
Here's that interplay you're talking about, Craig. You're right. I don't think we've ever seen a film, it's a good point, where a character of Sly interacts with both parents. Of course, Stop or Mama Will Shoot is one of the only ones I can think of when he's with a parent.
Bertie, see how you're dressed to eat? Look, you want to talk honest, Nick? If you can't do nothing right here, huh? How you gonna do right down there? I forget it. Be a pastry maker.
Nick, figlio mio, I almost died having you. But don't be a cowboy, please. They even get diseases from sleeping with animals.
You leave, we rent the room, I'm telling you. You're gonna embarrass us. You're suffering a sons of Italy. Storbito!
Oh, whoa, whoa. Folks, ain't nobody gonna embarrass nobody. This man's gonna be a country singer. He's gonna win that bed, he's gonna win my contract, gonna win that taxi, but most of all, he's gonna be gone. Now, I appreciate the hospitality and the fact like that you gave birth to this fella here.
Say again?
That dude's like 53, Ryan. That dude is not in his 60s.
Now, I never saw Saturday Night Fever, but is his dynamic with his parents similar to Danny Zuko or whatever the hell his name is in Saturday Night Fever?
Well, kind of. Yeah, I mean, you've got annoyed Italian parents. Let's just stop the recording right now. Doug, go watch Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, I know. It's blasphemous.
I think I've maybe seen it the one time, probably around the same time I saw Rhinestone, maybe when I was a kid, to be honest with you.
Oh, man, we watched it here at the house like 4 months ago. It was on HBO, and they had both cuts of the movie. They had the R-rated cut, and then they had the PG-13 re-release version, or the PG version, where they got rid of the P-finger line and some other lines. Guys, that's a great movie. You got to watch it.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And didn't we cover Staying Alive on this show?
No, I think you're thinking of your glory days with Slycast. We're dragging you through this muckety muck here.
Doug, I think you're right. This is like I think the stereotypical Hollywood annoyed Italian parent has a kid that wants to break out on their own and not do what the family's done for generations.
Right.
So, Doug, you got any other funny things you want to share that you liked about the film? Any
funny scenes? Just go right to Tennessee and all the shenanigans.
So this was supposed to be the fish out of water story, like the Crocodile Dundee of the 80s, the idea of he's from New York, he's going down to the South, and I get totally different cultures. So I'm thinking to myself, 40 minutes of the film, comedy will now ensue because we have a fish out of water, and he's wearing his tux for some reason. Is there a reason why he's wearing a tux?
Sly did all his own wardrobe on this movie. Okay. You can't convince me otherwise. At the beginning of the episode, Ryan, you read that quote where Sly said he wanted to be down and dirty and gritty and filmed in New York. So we just saw the first 40 minutes to this movie where they did a lot of on-location shooting in Manhattan. You can't fake that on a back lot. But where was this rest of the story was it not supposed to happen in Tennessee, according to Sly? Like, it seems like going to Tennessee is a pretty important part of this movie.
I think that's the rewrite. Maybe that was Sly's rewrite, is that he wanted the fish out of water story.
The only thing that doesn't work is they act like getting from New York City to Tennessee. They don't show how they get there. Obviously, they take a plane, because the night before his final performance, he's like, tomorrow night, he's going to knock him dead or whatever. It's just funny they never actually show them getting there or how they got there or coming back.
No, they're just there.
Which could have been there could have been a whole cool, 10-minute road trip element of this movie as well, which would have fun as well,
This movie was already almost 2 hours. Like, where do you shove in a road trip element? I would like to say, though, you have him up on screen. Richard Farnsworth is just a treasure.
Tremendous.
He's great.
He's tremendous
actor. He was also 53 in this film.
So he made a great movie towards the end of his career called The Straight Story. I don't know if either one of you guys have seen it.
Yeah. Yes.
Great, tremendous great movie. There's a great scene at the end with Harry Dean Stanton, which is just two old dudes acting the shit out of a scene. Straight Story. It was directed by David Lynch, of all people. It's like probably the straightest David Lynch movie there is. I mean, not to bring a downer on this, but Richard Farnsworth, he actually killed himself.
He did?
That was life ended, yeah. I don't know
at
if
that age?
Not at 53, no. But I mean, he was an old man. I almost want to say maybe he had some kind of illness or something. Mm. So wasn't he also a stuntman earlier in his life?
Yes, I did see that, yeah.
Tremendous career. He brings a great bit of magic to this movie. Yeah. I think it's a good time to talk about just what a natural performer Dahlia is. I mean, she'd been entertaining since she was a kid, but she's a genuinely natural actress. And I think the scenes between her and her dad are just great. It mm-hmm. seems like a daughter interacting with her father. I mean,
yeah.
There's no disingenuous Dolly scenes in this movie.
Dolly is the highlight. Can't say anything bad about Dolly. She's fantastic. There are some good actors and there's some good moments, sure, but I think, and I hate to put it on Sly, because I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the writing. I guess his acting is fine if you want to look at it as he is this character. This is, he at least stayed true to the character. This Nick guy, it just seems to be goofy, silly, heart of gold, not offensive at all. Like, he wasn't mean ever. It seemed like he really wanted to do well by all this, and he truly was a fish out of water when he came down here. And but then he accused Dolly later of being pushy and all this stuff. I was like, I didn't really see that. Do you remember that, the scene with them at the dinner table?
I think they try to establish that he's way more open to direction from Tim Thomerson. There's a little bit of woman hating from all the characters in this movie. Like, they're all constantly discounting Dolly's ability or her opinion of things. So I think it was just more of that.
You know, and she's just as much a fish out of water as he is, being in New York for the first part of the film, but it doesn't faze her because, I don't know, she's been in it a while, or she's, you know, already made a name for herself.
Yeah. You could argue things just bounce off of her easily.
And speaking of bouncing, we've got the snare drum here, Ryan. It's the Wild Possum Band.
Yeah, they're great.
Did you guys notice in the end credits, one of the bands, there were a lot of Partons in that band. Yeah. There were like four of them. So I don't know if it's probably this Wild Possum Family Band.
Yeah.
But it was all Dolly Family.
And did you recognize the bassist from the Rhinestone with the beard?
Yeah. That's Leo Sklar. He's legendary. He's played on thousands of recordings.
He's a big part of Genesis and Phil Collins years.
Yes. There, yeah. You'll see him in the old Phil Collins videos. But I mean, that guy's an absolute legend. I mean, he's played on literally thousands of records.
And he's still alive.
Yeah. He was probably 40 in this.
He was 53 as well.
Everybody's 53.
People looked older back then, man. I don't know what it was.
I know. Okay, this scene comes out of nowhere. I think this is the Drinkenstein scene. I think I've got it queued up. So there's no lead up. We all of a sudden just see Nick, played by Sly, in this ridiculous getup. He's singing Drinkenstein. Right. This is this famous part of the film. But as a first time viewer, essentially is what I was confused. As like, how did we get here? Why are we here? Why is this happening in this world? Why is he performing this? Because we have to assume he has practice. This is not his first time singing the song. He has to learn the lyrics. He has to sing within the certain key or try to. He's practice. I guess time has passed since he's arrived. 2-3 days, 4 out of the 2 weeks, no time has been indicated. All of a sudden we just see him performing with the Wild Possum Band. I just want our viewers to see a little bit what I'm talking about. Again, I can't play too much of it, but let's just show
too much water.
Is he here yet? I thought it was
Drinkenstein.
It's at night when he does Drinkenstein. She's giving him like homework assignment
in that scene. She did the okay, let's see what you got. Hands him a guitar, and he starts doing that Tutti Frutti bit again.
Oh yeah, that's right. Was that the scene?
He just starts screaming into the microphone.
Oh, was that scene at the beginning there?
That's what when you started playing was that.
Yes,
and it shows the dogs like running away and everything.
Oh, okay, my apologies.
Worked for all me. Right, that was funny, Craig. I'll give you that one. The dogs,
all
reacting.
The animals just hightailing it out of there.
Nothing better than animal comedy.
That's it. That's all you move.
That's country.
That's rigor mortis.
Okay, that was the one funny line. He's moving so stiffly. Get it? Anyways, I thought it was clever. But
here's something. Hit me an open chord. Now, can you play something country?
Can I play something country? Nick? Stand back.
You know what his character reminds me of? A non-slurring Rocky from Rocky 5. He mentions all the jokes and the quips. You know, in Rocky 5, he's just endless with the jokes after he gets the brain damage. You know, like, I'm going to buy a parking meter.
He does this thing, like, when somebody asks, can you do such and such? Can I do such and such? And then he goes into, like, this.
Well, that's the thing I kind of like about the character is he's got, like, this false bravado because he thinks he can deliver, but he can't. But he's got this crazy confidence, which is ultimately what
fake it till you make it, right?
Well, yeah, but that's ultimately what makes him succeed, spoiler, at the end of the movie. It's not his singing ability, it's his confidence and his ability to entertain.
Sure. So he's going to show what he can do. We saw what he can do on his big organ. Now we're going to see what he does on the guitar.
Oh, Oh! 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 McDonald had a farm. Yeah, yeah. And on this farm he had a cow. Yeah, yeah. What if I walk here in the back? I got a cow, so don't tell me cow. Boo! What a boo boo here, boo boo there. Everywhere, boo boo. No. Get out!
Whoa. That shit works for me. I'm sorry. That works for
me. No, you don't have to apologize. Craig, there are people listening to the show who have a soft spot for this movie. Do not apologize. We need to have a defenders because I didn't laugh. I felt uncomfortable.
Ryan, you compared this to Escape Plan 3 earlier, so your opinion is completely invalidated.
That there was like a classic one take thing because he starts go, "Oh, McDonald had a cow with a bow wow here. Wait, that's not a cow sound. What does the cow say? Moo moo." You know, he's just jamming out on the guitar the whole time.
I also love Ryan. You just flip past him in the yellow skeleton shirt. This is Stallone, like with his Rocky III body,
right? Oh yeah, he is thin in this film.
Yeah
he is.
I'm gonna have to snip that. I'm gonna have to snip that right now. Keep talking, guys. Keep talking. Like I gotta get a picture of this.
Who wrote this song?
It said all the music was by Dolly Parton, except for in the end, there's like one or two songs that were credited to songs, you know, existing songs. I think Dolly wrote this. I mean, she's a talented songwriter.
Yeah. My take on this scene, to put you up on stage in a humiliating outfit, singing a bogus song, if you can deliver it with confidence, then there's something to build on. Like, you start at the bottom and work your way up. And right now, they set him up to start at the rock bottom, wearing that outfit and singing this song.
So it was like initiation?
Kind of, or just to see if he can still do it. If he can do it looking like that, singing that song, and she still thinks that she can build upon that.
Why does he sing like this? Up and down. I didn't understand. He does this up and down thing.
Yeah, sure. You got yourself a deal, cowgirl. Okay?
Oh, and St. Nick, the wild possums are going to be here soon, and I left an outfit laying on your bed.
Oh, yeah?
You're going to love it.
All right. I love new clothes. I'll see you later.
So why is he moving like this? I don't understand.
He's feeling the beat.
He's feeling the beat.
Budweiser, you created a monster, and they call him freaking Stein.
Stein.
Stein. Yeah. Okay. So there's the drinking Stein. I'm again, for copyright purposes, I'm not gonna play a lot of it. But so they're trying to train him to be a cowboy. So they got him doing the walk and all this.
Yeah,
stuff.
Walk like you've got jock itch.
Yeah.
Which pays off later in the movie. I don't know if you guys caught the at the rhinestone. Somebody says he's walking like he's got jock itch.
Yeah. Yes. Did say that.
Or is it at the club in Tennessee the night before? Either way, they pay this joke off.
But why is he still wearing the outfit?
This is the only cowboy outfit he has,
I guess.
And Dolly's got her little tiny hat on there, with cute little tiny hat.
This movie also felt very long.
Yes. This bar scene right here, this turns into a Three Stooges bit. The fight, I guess. After this Barnett guy comes back at Sly, after Dolly Parton knocks him out, Sly goes to, he punches him and makes a sound effect with his mouth.
No, that's later. There's two bar scenes in this.
Oh, right. The first one, Sly.
The first
walks
one,
away.
She basically takes his manhood. She doesn't let him fight back.
Right. She makes
look
him
at that.
Away.
She doesn't let him be a man. And then we get the scene later.
Him and those two goons, Barnett and those two goons, are like the Three Stooges. If you're going to make like a slapstick comedy, then I'm all in with these guys. These guys, I didn't mind.
So he's holding his jaw. He keeps checking his mouth if it's bleeding, but he has a mark on his cheek, I think, from the hit. And it wasn't his jaw. But I noticed that the mark was here, but he, anyways, little film flipsy.
It's like high on his cheekbone.
Yeah. They thought they got the upper hand. Now, Dolly and Sly, they do a performance here at the Tennessee bar. And of course, we find out later this went over well. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, the moviegoer part of me is like, okay, this is going over well. So what's the issue with the bar in New York, the Rhinestone in New York? Because this crowd loves her. But we found out later that Dolly says to Sly, no, they were cheering for me. They love me. You're the problem. And I'm like, that was the one part of the film. Maybe we'll actually get to the scene where, yeah, we should get where it actually made the most sense. I felt like, and of course it's Dolly's character, like Dolly was speaking what I felt through the whole film. I felt like, why are we all being hoodwinked by this? And by Dolly's character saying, you can't perform. You can't win. You know, don't you see what they're saying in the papers? I felt that way. I felt like, okay, finally, the woman speaking sense here that, Sly, you can't sing and you can't perform. There's no way that you're going to be a country singer. And I actually kind of appreciated the fact that even back then, to a degree, even this whimsical, fantastical type comedy with fish out of water, all these things. But at the end, we actually got a bit of insight from the character that she's like, you're a bit of a gong show. It's just for one song. And if we can pull off one song, then I'm out of the contract. And I was like, oh, that's legit. And her being real, you know, by saying, don't go join American Idol. You know, you're not going to get through.
That was like your typical Hollywood goofy character gets a slap of reality so they can create some last minute tension or have a fallout between the characters before the great reunion at the end. It works for me. It seemed a little out of character for Dolly's such a nice right. person. Like, it almost seems like they should have had her be a little bit more frustrated, but also at the same time, maybe she was just, it was so clear to her that she was more perplexed that it wasn't like obvious to him as well.
Mm, yeah, fair.
I also think it, you know, coming from somebody who put in the work and grinded out however many years of rejection and being told she's not good enough to actually making it. And then all of a sudden he's going to snap his fingers and say, I'm going to be a country star. Like, it doesn't work that way. And from her, as somebody who's put in the work and who's pounded the pavement trying to get it done, it's probably a little offensive to her.
You know, she's been grinding. Yeah. You know, she's been doing this business for many years and she's still only working at the rhinestone, so to speak. So she's like, you know, you think you're just going to sing one song with me and you're going to be a star? Yeah.
Right. It's in that second bar in Tennessee scene when he gets on stage and her ex-boyfriend starts heckling him. The roast style jokes that he throws back at the guy were actually not bad.
Oh, like,
I don't think those were written by Sly.
All the grease in your hair. Did you comb your hair with a pork chop? Yeah. Doesn't he talk about like screwing a cat or something?
Yeah. Yeah. The cat's pregnant.
You can always tell when Barnett's been over my house. The toilet ain't never flushed and the cat's pregnant.
And the next one, his zipper's rusty and his boots are yellow.
I will give credit. The sound Foley work, they actually made his mic sound different. Like a 1980s microphone.
Barnett, you know, it looks like you got a slight bladder problem. I can tell that from your rusty zipper and yellow boots.
You must know Barnett pretty good.
So I don't think Sly wrote those jokes. There's no friggin' way.
I will give credit to Sly, of course, and to Dolly especially, of course, that when they were singing these songs on the stage for the film, they were live performances. It wasn't canned music because you could tell with the interaction and Dolly talking, the little speak parts they were doing between the singing, that this was live on mic. I will give full credit to that. Yes, of course, Sly can't sing and he knows he can't sing and Frank knows he can't sing, but that's the whole point of the character. The reason why they don't have Frank Stallone doing this film because he actually can sing. It wouldn't be funny to take Frank, who might just be an out of luck singer, to sing a country song. It'd be very easy training. The whole idea is this guy is a New York City cab driver and he doesn't have a singing bone in his body. And Dolly's the one that trains him from literally nothing to something that's passable for fun. That's the whole point. But that being said, I did notice my ear, my music for live performances. I'm not a music guy, but I can tell when something's live. And yeah, their voices were live on the mic and they sang it live. So I give them credit for that.
The whole family scene too.
Which one?
Sly's buddy was there.
Yeah.
I think you've interviewed you that dude the... before.
No, that was the other guy. Yeah.
Oh, that, okay. I forgot that dude's name, but he had a falling
Jimmy
out
Jimmy Gambino.
Sly, right? Yeah.
What was he doing in this film?
Sly's throwing a bone?
Was he in the film?
It was after
he's like
Dolly
smack dab in the middle of the shot too. Like
he's in the shot. It was like another Sly favorite, the Jimmy. He's the guy, of course, that plays Mike in the first Rocky film, and Jimmy in the fifth Rocky film.
Yeah. We have this very tasteful coitus scene where everybody's dignity is intact at the end.
So they have this big sing off together where Sly sings with Dolly. He's back in New York and everyone's embraced it. In fact, he's a cowboy now. And this is the moment where Dolly mentions that you can't sing rock.
Sly looks pretty good here as a cowboy, I think. I think there he is right there. You caught him.
Oh, there he is. Another, there he is.
I didn't catch him there. He's in another shot either. Later, but I just caught him here.
That's weird because he wasn't in the second Rocky film or the third one yet. He's in this film. That's weird. Wonder how he ended up there because there's some sort of discussion. Okay. So we have never gotten, other than you could argue the Rambo films to a degree, a true Sly Western. It's too bad.
Yeah.
Let's hear this.
Wait, you don't think I could ever go back to driving a taxi again, do you? I mean, Jake, I'm a singer now.
Oh.
That's right. He's a Sinatra.
Take the cab.
What makes you think you're a singer after 2 weeks?
I mean, I do. After feeling what I felt up there on that stage, I could never go back to hacking a taxi.
I get it, and I bet you it feels great to be a rock star. I bet you it feels fantastic to have people cheer for you and what have you. So he's saying, hey, I know what it feels like to have people cheer and while I perform. And she's like, well, yeah, but those people were cheering and your family's cheering here because they're your family. And my family friends are cheering for me back at the other place. But for the public, especially for the Rhinestone public, because they've got groups of hecklers going there, there's no way you're going to survive this. There's no way you're going to be a performer. So she gets the real talk, the straight talk, which is ironically a film she started in later. So we go to the end. Why this outfit?
She made that for him special, didn't she?
Was that set?
I thought it was.
Right, so here. Nothing's off.
Nothing's off. Says.
I love this apartment, too, by the way. That fireplace. So,
classic 80s. Fire.
Crackling fire.
Some mood lighting and some
mood lighting. Sounds. So he's trying to set up, you know, Harvey Weinstein, this place.
This one needs no explanation. Dig it.
Look at that.
Looks like Superman's bed.
I love it.
Good night, Brady.
And then he's got the Matt Lauer device.
Boom. Yeah, there you go. He locks the door. Wow. Reminds me of the Rocky One scene. Don't leave. Don't leave. Okay, so Sly's wearing that ridiculous outfit at the end of the film. He can't, for the life of him, somehow track down a cab. So he takes the Rhinestone horse.
I think that's Mel Tillis he steals the horse from.
Test drive. Listen to this ADR in the studio. This is not him on the horse. So you can imagine Sly in the, hey, get on the horse. Hey, test drive. Hey, whoa, cease and desist. Like he's doing all these jokes in the studio for the horse scenes. And then, of course, it's the Lone Ranger. Is that the Lone Ranger thing? What's it called again? That song? It's called like the
Revelry or something.
Yeah. Relax, ready?
That's
right.
You know what I love about this is, and I've noticed this in a lot of movies recently from this time period that take place in cities, is you can just see where they closed off the street and there's just crowds of people watching.
Sure.
Like here it makes sense because the guy stole a horse. So, but it's just funny that you can just see, they're like, there's no way around it. There's people watching us film.
Yeah. So he rides a horse instead of a cab.
He was actually a good horse rider at this point, right?
Yeah. He's always seemed to be an equestrian throughout his career. Yeah.
So he does that like guy that doesn't know how to ride a horse pretty well.
Yeah, you almost have to know how to ride a horse to fake not ride a horse.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So he gets to Trump Tower, goes
right into the lobby.
Here was the scene that Doug was talking about. Where he's trying to break down the door. Dolly's being harassed inside the apartment. And I thought what was going to happen, though, is that they were going to open the door on him. He was going to go
running through. I thought that, too, Ryan.
Okay. So, of course, the guy goes flying out, and I'll give credit. This is a little bit forward for its time. It wasn't Sly that knocked him out. Yeah. It was Dolly. I will give credit to that for this film, especially for 1984, that Dolly was not a damsel in distress ever throughout this film.
You look at movies historically, and there's been a lot of talk recently about Hollywood catering to certain segments of the population. Sure. It's always been woke.
Yeah.
You know, this movie proves it. And there's tons of other movies where we talked about Big Trouble in Little China. The Asian guy in Big Trouble in Little China is the real hero of that movie. Kurt Russell just reacts through that whole movie. So it's just funny. I love the Jay character in this movie. The only thing that's hard to understand is why she's not a star. Unless you go with the idea that, you know, this guy had been suppressing her just because he wants to sleep with her. He has her in this contract that it's a dead end.
I admit, when he was ready to do the song at the end, he started singing this terrible country song. I was like, I actually couldn't think, how is he going to get out of this? I thought, yes, Dolly was going to join them. Of course, she does join them on stage. But the song at the beginning is like, oh, I can't believe this song would ever be considered to be the song. And so he decides to do, hey, you know what? I guess you could say Back to the Future stole this idea where Marty McFly does the Chuck Berry solo, and he's like, you know, your kids aren't ready for this just yet. So this is Sly's version of, because he says, if I'm going to die up here, I'm going to die my way. And that was his.
If you don't want to play in my fantasy.
Shut up! You're giving me a rhinestone rash!
He says, shut up, you're giving me a rhinestone rash. All right. He's getting heckled. He's getting heckled pretty hard, rightfully so. But again, when he does this country, I don't know why he bops up and down. Is that a country thing? I'm not familiar. Is it just designed to show that he's not really into it?
You can definitely see his confidence is starting to waver.
Every time he did this duck face, I thought of Doug. I thought Doug's going to love the duck face. He does so much sly duck face in this film. Have you noticed that, Doug?
I did notice it, and it was only when he was, like, failing. Did he have any work done before this point?
The face fixed up. This is the Rocky III face, right?
Right. It has to be. Because whenever he does that, it does this thing to, like, accentuate his cheekbones, and it just bugged me every single time.
They did make fun of his hair. They said his hair was higher than his IQ. Did you catch that? Low insult thrown his way. So I thought, okay, at least they acknowledged his hair.
Yeah, he's a good sport about it.
Yeah. So he says here, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down my way. I'm going to... How did the band know this was the song?
They're pros, man. Come on. He probably told them, up-tempo boogie or something, you know.
It's like in Back to the Future. Watch for the changes and try to keep up.
Maybe Back to the Future actually ripped off Rhinestone. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, he goes, if I'm going to go down, I'll go down my way. Now, this is the character. So if you want to talk about Sly and the character, where does it separate? Because now this is the character Nick saying, I'm going to rock this joint. How much of it is Nick? And how much of it is Sly trying to show Frank a little bit, brother, I can sing too, I can rock too. Because he gives it all to the character Nick. But I sometimes wonder if it's Sly doing it, if that makes sense.
It's 90% him trying to show his worth to Frank. 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
100% is 90%.
Okay. Plays it off a little more campy in this than the theme song for Paradise Alley was more of him showing Frank, look what I can do.
Because we know the Nick character's a little bit eccentric stuff, but I'm just saying when Sly performs this, there's a part of you that thinks he's showing audiences and Frank a little bit that, you know, I could also be a rock star.
How y'all doing over there tonight?
Oh, yeah. Okay. He says something to the fact, like, all the dudes in the house say, yeah. And he goes, all the horny ladies in the house say,
well, he's doing like a classic sort of wrestling thing where you pump the audience up. The easiest way is, you know, they call it like the cheap pop, right? And if you compliment the audience, that's a great way to get them on your side. It's clever that they knew that they weren't going to be able to convincingly say this guy's singing ability alone was going to win this crowd over. I think it's a cool ending. And I mean, if this movie was not a comedy and, you know, went more down the straight drama Rocky sort of road, or if, like, you know, you almost went with like the 8 Mile sort of tone, this could have been a really moving, emotional.
Well, so Sly said I think he wanted like a Star Is Born. I think Sly wanted as a Sly Is Born.
I like the way he brings back the crowd is more convincing than if he just got up there and sang. Song that he started singing this, but after he gets the crowd, I was hoping that he would go into a banger of a song that would really get everybody
like a White Snake. He should have done a slide it in version, it would have been slide it in. Right.
You know, a really hot track would have been Far From Over.
Boom!
Oh, there you go. Oh, yeah,
Ba-dum.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. And Leo Sklar would have killed that on the bass.
Well, he goes right back into the crappy song that he started singing to begin with.
you want to act up a little bit, let's act up a little bit, okay? Hey. And I call the...
Look at the move there.
Good-looking women out there to say yay. Oh, come on, I know there's better-looking women out there. Let me hear you say yay. Let me hear all the horny women in the audience say yay.
Wow. Look at that one lady to the right there. Look at her cheer. Yeah, horny. Look at her. She is sliding off her seat. She's so horny. Look at her. Holy smokes. Folks, this is ridiculous.
I might be easy, but at least I am cheap. Stay out of my bedroom. Baby, if you can't take the heat. Stay out of.
So you can hear that it's live. That's what I mean. When he does those actions and movements, you can hear the breath come out of him. So it's singing it live. And of course, Dolly joins him on stage.
Seeing this right here, Sly doing a duet with Dolly Parton wearing this ridiculous rhinestone outfit.
I guess it matches her dress, I guess, was the idea,
it,
too.
It gives me an incredible amount of respect for Stallone and the choices he made. Say what you want about the successes or failures that he's had. Can you see, I mean, I know Arnold went down this road with Kindergarten Cop and Twins and stuff, but this is... Sly paving the way for that shit. I don't think he gets credit for taking the chances that he took.
No,
he could have had a really boring career. And he said, you know, sometimes you fail, but he took the shot.
That you can never take away from him. He went for it. When he decided to go for something, he really went for it. And his performance kind of suffers because he does go so over the top with some of those performances. He went for it.
I agree with everything you're saying. I've always admired Sly for taking chances. Arnold couldn't do this film. So this is where Arnold and Different are different. I'm not saying better or worse, but I'm saying Arnold couldn't pull off a singing film at all. I will give Sly credit for doing this. I know he says he wishes he never did that. He does it all the time.
Oh, here's the band, by the way. So the Wild Possums was filled with a bunch of Owens. And it's the Cut and Slice band that's all Partons. Look at that.
Partons. Partons and Puckets.
Yeah.
There is Lee Sklar.
Yeah. And then all music and lyrics by Dolly Parton. And then they list a couple songs that aren't.
You know how Kunda always gets outfits that Sly wore in his films?
Yeah. Why is he not wearing that one?
He posted Drinkenstein like a week or two ago, though, on Instagram.
Does he have a Drinkenstein outfit?
No. I mean, he posted this scene. I don't know if he saw that we were going to be covering it.
Well, maybe. We announced it, but yeah, there are listeners. I know people are excited for us to cover this. And this is what I think has happened with you. I could be wrong. It's not a criticism, but it's an observation. I think there's some nostalgia for you. I think there's some nostalgia viewing. So this is a film that I saw, like I said, when I was a kid, and I just never went back. And I didn't go back, not because of like, I just never went back to it. I've been a Sly fan for decades. You name the movie, I saw it in the theaters. After Rocky III, I think I saw most of his films in theater. Of course, I probably saw this as a kid because I saw everything Sly did, but there might have been a subconsciously there was a reason why I never reinvestigated. I was embarrassed, or I had no interest to seeing Sly sing or hear him sing. Watching it for the first time in 3.5 decades, I wasn't even trying to find fault. I would watch Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. I think that generally has some funnier moments in the film.
I think it's a better film than Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. I think it's a funnier film than Oscar. The fact that we have three absurd Stallone movies to choose from speaks volumes about the choices he made and the career that he had.
It's good that we saw John Wayne do a whimsical farce. That should have been done. I think that's what makes Sly braver than John. Maybe Sly might feel embarrassed or like, oof, I got some egg on my face. But he also should be proud that he was braver than John. And took those chances and those big swings. So I agree with everything you're saying, Craig, about the big swings, take some chance, stepping out of his comfort zone. I think this is a film, sure. I think with more, I think I could watch it again and not be as cringe by it. I think I was just so surprised. I actually thought it was going to be a better, the right way. I don't know how to describe it. I guess I just thought it was going to be different or funnier than it was. Like Police Academy, for example, those aren't good films, but they're funny. And or Naked Gun, or like, I don't know how to, like,
you know, but I just watched four Police Academy movies yeah. this week. This fits alongside completely because those movies okay. are fucking dumb. And at the end of the day, this is a dumb movie.
I couldn't remember. That's the thing. I came in thinking that it was a smarter comedy. And mm-hmm. I don't mean that to say it was. Had I known, Ryan, watch this like you're watching the first Police Academy film, type of acting and comedy, like, oh, that type of 80s comedy. That's where I was misled in my brain.
I kind of in the same vein as you guys. If Sly kind of toned down his part, if he played like a straight man in a slapstick comedy, like Ted Stryker in Airplane, for example,
right.
it would have been done better. I think it would have been like the jokes would have landed. Just his delivery of the comedy doesn't work.
And he kind of threw Bob Clark under the bus here by saying it was supposed to be a Mike Nichols film. But right. you know, all of these choices were Sly choices. You know, yes, he wasn't looking to Bob Clark for direction advice. On the performance.
No, right. No. Yeah, I think if I could go back in time and bend Sly's ear after his surgery, bend his ear and say, hey, let's just tone down the Nick. Make it more about the relationship. Make it more about the fish out of water. Sure, and all that stuff.
The difficult thing was here is we had to establish that he was a character that had confidence and bravado. It's hard to do that in a subtle manner.
You've changed my mind a little bit, Craig. You've shown me why you think the way you do, and I appreciate that. So yeah, folks, if you haven't seen the film, it really haven't spoiled anything. I think you owe it to yourself. If you're any way, shape, or form a Sly fan and have not seen this film, you owe it to yourself, especially after hearing our comments. I'd be interested to hear people say, hey, here's my preface. Go into it knowing it is a goofy 80s comedy, and the Sly character would have fit in a Meatballs type environment. That's how goofy and silly his character is.
Did I come around on it? Maybe slightly. I kind of
Craig helped me a little bit. Help me see what it was a little bit
more. I kind of hyperbolically said that my life is split into two segments, but
pre and post ride.
Well, we could continue.
I was just so bugged by his delivery on
we should jokes. Tease our next episode. Maybe we will just continue the comedy trifecta. We did Stop Run, Mom Will Shoot. We've done now Rhinestone. I think it's fair to ourselves in the channel if we do, of course, Oscar. I think we need to reinvestigate Oscar. Are there any Oscar.
Good movies left?
I think we need to reinvestigate Oscar. I think Oscar might have
to... Somebody else is going to have to take the defending Oscar stance here. I mean, I'm clearly
wrong. Maybe it'll be me. I don't know. I haven't seen that movie in a long time, Craig. It's been a long... I don't remember the plot. All I remember is that
he was Sly's named Snaps Strobalone. Dad.
I don't remember that. Snaps is right. I forgot about
Snaps
that.
Strobalone. See, look,
I'm already laughing.
See, and I think his dad or somebody dies. And that, don't tell me. Don't. But I think that's all I remember.
Something well, it's also got Marissa Tomei as well. So like,
okay. I think if next time I watch this film, I'll have to just keep in mind that Sly plays a goofy 80s type comedy character. What's next for Doug, on your podcast journey?
Dripping out those episodes of Rocky III for a Rocky Minute.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear mine.
Yeah, you got a while. I still got to record some in between yours.
Yeah, I do want to say, Doug, one of the benefits of having a delayed release schedule is you were able to pay tribute in a way that wasn't expected to guys from Answering the 10 Count. One of those guys passed away recently. So I know it was really special probably for his co-host to be able to hear them together podcasting. Yeah. It's a weird benefit of delaying the release of that episode is it became a nice tribute to, and I wish I remembered the dude's name, and Tommy, I'm revealing myself
Tommy?
Here.
Tommy. It's Tommy. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And we Rocky Minute had the last few of his recordings released. Not that they were the last recorded, but the last released. Right. So
cool. That was a really cool tribute. And I thought that was special too, actually, to hear that. So it was sad too, though. I will admit, I don't know him. I don't know Tommy from anybody, but just to hear his voice as a podcaster, being in this quote unquote hobby business that we're in, it was like, oof, I guess there will be a time that all of our lives will end here and our voices will continue on the
recently a past guest of my Star Trek podcast took his own life and my co-host Jeff was able he recorded hours of podcasting with us, so my friend Jeff put together this like hour-long best of episode for him that we were able to share with his his friends and his family. And I listened back to it and I thought of how special it was that we had these moments that we were able to share with his loved ones and his friends and his family. And that's 100% a benefit of podcasting is not everybody has the ability to go back and listen to somebody they love talk about stuff that they love. It made me feel like I was part of something bigger than goofy shit that we're doing. Like, this might be something that somebody puts on 10 years from now as a source of comfort when they think about loved one that they lost. Well, no, but goodness, if I die before the two of you and you put out a tribute episode and it's me gushing about Rhinestone, oh no.
You're going to haunt us.
Beyond the grave. You guys are a true pleasure to podcast with. You're the friends I've never shook hands with yet. One day we will. I appreciate the friendship that you guys have given me over the years. We've been doing this for a few years now, at least 3 to 5 years, and you're the best at the business.
I think it's longer than 5 years. We've recorded Rocky Minute episodes. We recorded our Copland episode in my old apartment, and we've been in the house now over 4 years.
The first three-way we did was the specialist.
The specialist, which was like part, that was officially a Slycast episode, I think.
No, you just put it on your Slycast, but it's okay. It was officially.
No, because that was the next logical Slycast
episode. Is that what it was? Okay.
The chronology.
Oh, I see.
We recorded a lot in the apartment. So
look how far we come. We're just as much as bums and ham and eggers now as we're. But the stream looks better. We finally look okay and sound okay. So we're moving up in the world. If you're watching this on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network or listening to this on the network, we appreciate everyone that does. Check out, of course, the Rocky Minute, and some retro Slycast will trickle out of there as well. And as always, guys, it's been a blast. All right, guys, we'll see you on the next episode.